Section 9 of The Testament of Beauty by Robert Bridges. This Legimus recording may be freely used and adapted as long as Legimus and the reader are credited. Book 3, Breed, Part 2. In higher natures, poetic or mystical, sense is transfigured quite, as once with Dante it was, who saw the grace of a fair Florentine damsel, as wisdom uncreate, for it happened to him in that awakening miracle of love at first sight, which is to many a man his only miracle, his one divine vision, his one remembered dream. It happed to Dante, I say, as with no other man, in the height of his vision, and for his faith therein, the starry plenitude of his radiant soul, searching for tenement in the bounties of life, encountered an aspect of spiritual beauty at the still hour of dawn, which is holier than day, as when a rosebud first untrammelleth the shells of her swathing petals and looseneth their embrace, so the sunlight may enter to flush the casket of her virgin promise, fairer than her full bloom shall ever be, ere its glories lie squandered in death. 'Twas of that silent meeting his high vision came, rapturous as any vision ever to poet given, since in that sacrament he rebaptized his soul and lived thereafter in love, by the merit of faith toiling to endow the world. And on those feathered wings his mighty poem mounted, panting, and lieth now, with all its earthly tangle, by the throne of God. So to Lucretius, also seeking order in chance, some frenzy of beauty came, neath which constraint he left his atoms in the lurch, and fell to worshipping Aphrodite, the naked goddess of man's breed, and, waving the oriflamme of her divinity above the march of his slow-trooping argument, he attributeth to her the creation and being of all beauty soe'er. Nec sine ti quicquam dies in luminis horas exoritor, neque fit laetum neque amabile quicquam. So well did he in his rapture. Such is beauty's power, physical or spiritual, and if it be the cause of spiritual emotion, as hath been said, 'tis plain that beauty will be engaged in man's love, in so far as 'tis a proper and actual attribute of man. First, as in animals, of his physical form, to which, when beauty of soul is added, the addition but marketh more specially its human character. Thus Shakespeare, in the sessions of sweet, silent thought, gathering from memory the idealization of love, when he launched from their dream sheds those golden sonnets that swim like gondolas in the wake of his drama, fashioned for their ensignry a pregnant axiom, and wrote, "From fairest creatures we desire increase, that thereby beauty's rose might never die," wherein he asserteth beauty to be of love the one motive, and that in double meaning of object and cause. And though blind instinct were full puissant of itself for propagation of man, yet the attraction of beauty bettereth the species, nor without it could there have been effect in spirit. And that the poet guardeth this showeth in his lyric, where of Sylvia 'tis inquired, "Why all the swains commend her," and he replieth thereto, "Holy fair and wise is she," thus giving to soul first place, thereafter to body, and last of the trine, intelligence, and that is their right order in love. And this high beauty of spirit, in the conscience of it, in the love of it, and the appearances of it, though it have no quarrel with that physical beauty whereof 'twas born, when once 'tis wakened in the mind, needeth no more support of the old animal lure, but absolute in its transmitted power and grace, maketh a new beauty of its own appearances. Thus oft the full majesty and happiness of love is found in lovers whose corporeal presences would seem disloyalty to the gay worshippers of the goddess of grace, nor fit to approach her shrine. Yet lightly will love rate the ridicule of them whose passion, subsisting in the flourish of flesh, outlasteth not its brief prime, but must fade and fade, as that fadeth, and when it perisheth, perish. And who themselves, save in the rout of their revel, they have perished immature, provide tales of despair, disease, and madness, melancholy tragedies of ignobility unredeemed, to scare mankind. But love's true passion is of immortal happiness, whereof the Greeks may be, whose later poets told of a heavenly Aphrodite, had some dim prescience before man ever arrived at their wisdom through Christ, and now teacheth to his children as their birthright, a gift whose wealth is amplified by spending, and its charm rejuvenated by habit, that dulleth all else, nor needeth it for joy to look off from this earth and beyond, nor to sit on the school bench with them who dispute in argument the existence of God. Being of eternity, it overcometh evil, as any native disposition is apt to do, but more surely, and with its virtue more self-secure than the merry or sad heart is, that in laughter or tears will keep unchanged its temper, whatsoe'er befall.
So pricketh him nature in her courages.
But think not Aphrodite therefore disdained for rout of her worshippers, nor sensuous beauty torn from her royal throne, who is herself mother of heavenly love, so far as in human aspect eternal essence can have mortal parentage. Our true compass in art, as our comfort in faith, our daily bread of pleasure. Enough that thus I deem of beauty among God's best gifts, and even above the pleasure of virtue accord it honour of men. The allure of bodily beauty is mutual in mankind, as is the instinct of breed, which though it seem either male more active, is either female more predominant, more deeply engaging life, grave and responsible. Thus while in either sex celibate lives are led, without impoverishment of intellect or will, this thing is rare in women, whereas in the man virginity may seem a virile energy in its angelic liberty, prerequisite to the perfection of some high personality. And here we are driven to inquire of reason how it came that bodily beauty is deemed a feminine attribute,
since not by science nor aesthetic could we arrive at such a judgment.
But not triflingly to trench on prehistoric problems, 'twill be enough to say that from the first it may not always have been so, and primacy of beauty may have once lain with the male, in days of pagan savagery, afore men left their hunting and took tillage of the fields in hand, superseding the women and all their moon magic, to invent a reasoned labour of intensive culture, as now 'tis seen. Whether in remotest Orient lands, whose cockcrow is our curfew, where Chineses swarm, teasing their narrow plots with hand and hoe, carrying their own dung on their heads obsequiously as ants, or on our western farms, where now machines usurp such manual labour, and have, with their strange forms, dethroned the heraldry of the seasons, fair emblems of eld that seem the inalienable imagery of mankind. How was November's melancholy endeared to me in the effigy of plough teams following and recrossing patiently the desolate landscape from dawn to dusk, as the slow creeping ripple of their single furrow submerged the sodden litter of summer's festival? They are fled, those gracious teams. High on the headland now, squatted, a roaring engine toweth to itself a beam of bolted shares that glideth to and fro, combing the stubbled glebe. And agriculture here, blotting out with such daub so rich a picture of grace, hath lost as much of beauty as it hath saved in toil. Again, where reapers, bending to the ripened corn, were wont to scythe in rank and step with measured stroke, a shark-toothed chariot rampeth biting a broad way, and, jerking its high swinging arms around in the air, swoopeth the swath. Yet this queer pterodactyl is well, that in the sinister torpor of the blazing day, clicketeth in heartless mockery of swoon and sweat, as 'twere the salamandrine voice of all parched things, and the dry grasshopper wondering knoweth his God. Or what man feeleth not a new poetry of toil, whenas on frosty evenings, neath its clouding smoke, the engine hath huddled up its clumsy threshing coach against the ricks, wherefrom labourers, standing aloft, toss the sheaves on its tongue, while the grain runneth out, and in the whir of its multitudinous hurry it hummeth like the bee, a warm, industrious boom that comforteth the farm, and spreadeth far afield with throbbing power, as when in a cathedral a while the great diapason speaketh, and the painted saints feel their glass canopies flutter in the heavenward prayer. Thus hath man's reason dealt since he took spade in hand, either by wit of the insect or of the engineer. And they who have come to think that in remotest times Eve delved and Adam span, can show matriarchy of sorts had precedent in nature, ostensibly among birds, whose males, more gaudily feathered, will disport their charms and dance in coquetry to win the admiring hens. Verily it may well be that sense of beauty came to those primitive bipeds earlier than to man. But how so in patriarchal times our code upgrew, it hath decretals honoured in the courts of love. 'Tis the faith of all poets from the troubadours to Shelley's broken amours, and that the fair muses should have masculine wooers was Apollo's will, who favoured his own sex. But had the god inspired poetesses, many as poets, could that have been, follies had cancelled out truly in the equation of love, and steadier fire of passion would have warmed the world. Today, if any lady in her boudoir rhymeth, she is drowned in man's tradition and disguiseth her tone, transposing her high music to the lower clef, or deemeth that the orthodoxy of the sapphic mode, because of the two love-songs which pedantry hath saved of Sappho's accomplished artistry, one by mischance, in that muliebrous dump which gave Catullus pause, hath this falsification of her true soprano. But 'twas the deeper voice that robed passion in song, with the masculine emotion that glorified it. And man, finding elation in physical beauty, and in the passion of sex, his chief transport of soul, ascribed supremacy of beauty to woman's grace, and she towardly accepted his idolatry. Yet if the passion had been identic in the twain, the woman surely had found her like ideal in man. But the motives of nature that determine life are hidden, and with the sexes they are unlike in love. For though true loves are mutual and of equal strength, and their bodily communion is a sacrament, like those irrevocable initiations of yore, whose occult ritual it was profane to disclose, and in its uttermost surrender of secrecies, hallowing brute instinct, symbolizeth approach to satisfaction of unattainable desire. Yet in fullest devotion and frankest abandon of eager and mutual mating, whether or no she ken, the woman's choice hath been by a deeper purpose led, whereof the mastering revelation awaiteth her in the reality of her motherhood. Wherefore, that her son may be noble, she will seek his sire, where her ideal, however vaguely imagined, lieth outside her sphere, beyond her, and so thinketh she less of that for which her mate praiseth and seeketh her, and longing evermore for what she most lacketh, in her thought of wisdom looketh for higher things, and for immortal roses desireth increase. How nature, as Plato saith, teacheth man by beauty, and by the lure of sense leadeth him ever upward to heavenly things, and how the mere sensible forms which first arrest him take on ever more and more spiritual aspect, yet discard not or disown their sensuous beauty, since that is eternal and sure, the essence thereof being the reverent joy of life. This everywhere is seen, and most overtly in breed. Too many, in truth, there be who find it never elsewhere. Yet man is slow to see that love's call to woman is graver and more solemn than it can be to him, by reason of her higher function and duty therein, and that all past attainment, which his spirit hath won, came to him through motherhood of the nursling boy. Yea, even the dignity of his masculine intellect, that outreacheth her range, was first of her making, and never could have fruited, but for the devout, fostering environment of her loving kindness. Nor can man's future attainment forego that shelter, wherewith her precocious girlhood accompanieth the ever-growing incumbency of his pupilage, as it grew in the brutes. And here 'tis seen again, how 'tis a backsliding and treason against nature, when women will unsex their own ideal of love, and ignorantly aiming to be in all things as men, would make love as men make it, though Sappho did that, who, rare among women for manly mastery of art, and none such of her kind, exceeded by default, nondescript, and for lack of the true feminine, borrowed effeminacy of men, the incontinence, who, ranking with gluttons in Aristotle's book, made a lascivious pleasure of their Lesbian loves. Till, in the event, the euphony of her isle's fair name whispered an unspoken and else unspeakable shame. Nor can the ethic that here intrudeth be denied, since if men speak of morals, 'tis of sex they think, for why the passion of it both transporteth their souls and troubleth daily life with problems of conduct. Now to the most who are like to read my English poem, Christian marriage will seem established ordinance, as universal, wholesome, and needful to man as wheat is, which, ubiquitous, and sib to a weed that yet will hamper its culture, overruleth all else, weigheth our gold by single grains, and harvested measureth in sacks the peace and welfare of the world, our bread of life, and symbol of the food of the soul. But though monogamy has been by wise lawgivers coded with rights and duties and property, and thus, by Jewish use or Roman, held place in the church, the instinct of sex was ever anathema to the Essenes, whose thought hanselled the faith. 'Twas to that sect the accursed contamination of all spiritual purity, and only after tough battle against two mighty outbursts of pagan poetry could marriage come in the end to its own, from being a tolerated discordancy to be an accepted harmony, and, hallowed as such within the church, a sacrament. Of those two wars the story is long, and now it is here briefly to tell. End of section 9.